Coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio, located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation, it's your host, Doug Hagman.
This is the Hagman Report, where truth can't be silenced. I want to welcome everyone to tonight's program, HagmanReportLive.com. That's where you can find all of our video and audio assets. That's HagmanReportLive.com, HagmanReport.com. There are some new articles up there cited from other sources, but extremely important pieces of information. That's at HagmanReport.com. And then, of course, HagmanStore.com for all of your coffee needs, gourmet coffee. That supports tremendous efforts by Craig Sawyer and by Russ Dizdar and our team as well to fight against human and child sex trafficking. Three types of coffee, three blends of coffee. Detective's Choice, my favorite, my go-to, hyper-caffeinated, whole bean, ground, and K-cups, as well as Patriot and Revolution blends as well. All good. All taste tested right here at the Hagman Studios. All right. By the way, it's in my cup right now. It's 5 days from roaster to my cup in this case. So just telling you, it's really good. All right. A lot of news to get into. First hour, I want to take you through what's taking place, kind of give you an intelligence briefing and an informational briefing. And second hour is going to be Stan Deo. So this first hour is really going to be important, I believe, because I think when you see things, how things I spent probably 4 or 5 hours looking at everything all across the board here before the show. And I'm seeing this theme develop, and we've got to talk. There's some issues here. I'm going to take this one by one so we can actually connect the dots. I mean, this is going to be well-structured. I want to start off by showing you two videos. One video is 17 seconds. The other is like a minute 15. And then a third video. All three they relate to one another. But the first video, this happened in Baltimore. Now, I don't know how many people have seen this, but there's a reason for me showing you this, and I'll get to that at the end here. If we have it ready, let's play this 17-second video. Here's a guy walking down the street in Baltimore, and let's see what happens.
Oh! Damn!
Okay. There. Yeah. Let it play one more time. Okay. That's fine. Notice a couple of things. Notice that this was obviously previously set up. There was a camera at the ready. The victim was identified ahead of time or selected ahead of time. And obviously you had a willing participant who did the assaulting, and there that individual is sneaking up behind this older man, striking him with a block or a brick in the head. And in many cases, this can be fatal. Coming out of nowhere. That's in Baltimore. We hear about Portland, we hear about Kenosha, we hear about all of these other cities, but we don't hear sometimes these little small incidents like this. And in that man's life, the victim's life, that was not a small incident. All right. Let's go to the second video now. This is in Raleigh, North Carolina. Did you hear, tuning into CNN? You know, the Don Lemons of the world and the... Have you heard? I mean, did you know Raleigh is suffering similar fates as other blue, democratically controlled cities in the United States? Minute 17 or minute 15 on this. this kind of gives you some insight into a very chaotic situation in Raleigh. This by BLM and Antifa groups. Let's take a look at this. This is Raleigh, North Carolina. Okay. Now, Eric the Tech, I sent you the...
Can you let the radio people what just happened? Let them know it?
I'm sorry. A lot of... Sorry about that for the radio people. I say, oh...
We just hear noise.
Yeah. Well, it's picture Portland minus the gunshots, minus the expletives, but just... It's a group of groups in a collective of Black Lives Matter and Antifa and other, and I say this deliberately, other anarchist groups all getting together and all causing mayhem on the streets of Raleigh. Okay, simple as that. I mean, that's what you heard, and if you'd see, just in your mind, picture, you know, Portland, picture Kenosha, picture every other democratically run city. All right. By the way, in Provo, Utah, there was a shooting at a car by a group of these very same protesters or protesters like this. So this is beginning to happen now everywhere. Okay, now we're 60-some days out from the election, 70 days, but I don't recall. I don't know exactly the exact date. But you can see things are ramping up. And the rhetoric now that we're seeing is that, well, this is Donald Trump's America. No, this is not Donald Trump's America. This is Ted Wheeler's America. This is Chris Cuomo and Don Lemon and Nancy Pelosi's America. That's what this is. As a matter of fact, Kayleigh, press secretary for President Trump, she had a press briefing. Here's just a segment of a much larger, much longer, I should say, video that was that she did yesterday. And this is where she calls out Chris Cuomo and Don Lemon and Pelosi and Ayanna Pressley, you know, the members of the squad. This is a really interesting takedown, I believe, of the mainstream media. So balance this against what you just saw, okay? Let's play this video from yesterday.
So interesting to me to see Democrats who once disparaged, who ignored the violence, I should say, all of a sudden caring about it. But let's not forget what they said previously. Speaker Nancy Pelosi downplaying the violence rocking U.S. cities, ignorantly saying people will do what they do. Jerry Nadler, when asked about Antifa, he said that was a myth that's being spread around Washington, D.C. It's not a myth. In fact, an Antifa individual took the life of an innocent Trump supporter in Portland. You have Rep. Ayanna Pressley saying that she wanted unrest in the streets. Chris Cuomo saying, show me where it says protesters are supposed to be peaceful. I'll give you an idea, Chris. It's the Constitution. Don Lemon saying, quote, the rioting has to stop, Chris, as you know, and I know. It's showing up in the polls. It's showing up in the focus groups. It's the only thing right now that's sticking. So now, all of a sudden, 90 days later, I, from this podium, have talked about law and order. The president has talked about law and order repeatedly, but because the polling has shifted, now it's time for the Democrats to deny what they said previously and all of a sudden focus on law and order. I'll leave you with this. That's like the arsonist blaming the firefighter.
Very interesting indeed. That's like the arsonist blaming the firefighter. That was, she said that before she walked away. So, you know, she's calling out Nancy Pelosi, Chris Cuomo, Jerry Nadler, and others. Jerry Nadler saying all this violence is a myth. Meanwhile, I don't know whether how many people heard about this. You have this. Let me grab this. These four anarchists were sentenced after throwing a chlorine bomb at a police officer, nearly killing him. And these four anarchists detonated seven other similar bombs. All right. Now, this wouldn't, I mean, bear with me here. So you've got four anarchists. They were sentenced last week. This is on the Gateway Pundit right now. On charges that they created a road hazard. Okay, a road hazard. Then the young leftist hurled a chlorine bomb at the police officer when he had to stop to clear the road. They were sentenced last week to 60 days in prison and probation for 2 years. Now this was an assault with a deadly weapon. And I want people really to understand this. When I say that, I don't mean that in any demeaning sense. I want everyone to really, really get how serious this is. The sentencing was last week. Last week, August 26th. They were convicted of throwing a chlorine bomb at an Arvada police officer as he attempted to declare a road hazard. That the hazard was built by the defendants to create a stationary target for their bombs. This happened on April 7th of last year. The Arvada Police Department received a call from a citizen regarding a road hazard. And the location was 72nd and Beach Street for those in the area. The police officer arrived to find that the street sign had been pulled out of the ground, put in the middle of the road, and then plastic wrap had been strung across the road. Now, the officer and the citizen began to attempt to clear the road barricade when this plastic bottle was thrown and landed near this police officer. He overheard someone yell obscenities at him. When the bottle hit the ground, it began releasing chlorine gas. Now, I don't know whether anyone has ever experienced chlorine gas, but that can kill you and make you dead pretty quickly and mess you up for a long time if it doesn't kill you.
Even if you just sniff a chlorine tablet, like smell one.
Yeah.
It
kind of messes you up, doesn't it?
Yeah, you could pass out instantly.
I'll tell you what, yeah, those people have swimming pools, you know. And
that's not even smoke.
No. And, you know, chlorine gas, just think World War One. Okay, anyway. So you've got this this judge, really, who arguably sentences outside of the sentencing guidelines. Now, hold that thought, okay, because here we have a judge. This would be the equivalent of a state court, state judge, all right? I'm not sure, you know, what they call this judge, whether it's in New York, for example, Supreme Court, in Pennsylvania, it's Court of Common Pleas, but it would be the equivalent of a state court of common pleas judge. Okay. By the way, the officer suffered very serious lung damage and spent months going to medical appointments and missing work. And he's still suffering the effects of that gas. As you said, Eric the Tech, I mean, it messes you up. Just plain chlorine, you know, can mess you up. Go sniff some bleach. But these men set up an ambush for the police. And this is April of 2019, right? Okay.
These aren't men.
Young boys. Young men. Well, they're men in terms of what they should be charged as. But yeah, these mopes, there they are, the Muppet Heads.
Winners. And, that's the winner club.
Yeah, yeah. The short bus club. You know, and maybe that's the meaning. I don't know. But you've got to ask yourself. You look at these people, and you just have to ask yourself, where do they come from? I mean, I'm very frustrated when you look at these. You know, this is not your grandmother's 1950s beatnik assessments, okay? This is something totally off the scale like that. But anyway, there they are. There they are. But you also have to ask yourself, what's going on with the Department of Justice? What's going on? What's going on with the media when they so assert that this is Donald Trump's America when it's not? When the press secretary has to say, wait a second, you've got Chris Cuomo and Don Lemon in the media calling out for violence, additional violence, attempting to rationalize the violence, or even saying the violence doesn't exist. Or when it does exist, it's always Donald Trump's fault, or it's always the fault of the right. It's never a fault of the left. It's misplaced blame. Again, we started out with the man with the sole single guy walking down the street in Baltimore getting hit with a brick. Then you see these other situations. And I just told you about this situation in with the chlorine gas attack. Okay. Now that kind of ventures into the judicial aspect of things. What's going on? Well, in Portland, we see this revolving door of justice or injustice. The Portland police have been arresting the very same people day or night after night after night after night after night for throwing bricks, rocks, bottles of yuck, okay, injuring police officers, injuring others, as well as breaking into stores, looting, rioting. So they arrest them, they charge them, they release them without bail. This is within no bail. I mean, go ahead. ROR, released on your own recognizance. Again, this speaks of, number one, the violence. Number two, the justice system as it stands. Okay? The acts, the violence, the justice system. And then there's some coordination here. Now, when we look at this, again, I'm making this path, so please, you know, follow along with me. Now, when we see that, and we know, we do know that these groups are being funded. As I said yesterday with Jack Heschel sitting here, and I've said before, these are very organized, and Randy Taylor will tell you this. This is our findings, and look, I can't prove this at this moment. There's a huge difference between saying and proving, but I do believe, based on everything we've found, and that there's a whole lot of circumstantial evidence, that some of the money that was used, the pallet, you know, put on pallets and cash sent to Iran, has made its way back here to the United States to fund these operations. Now, that's not all of it. That's part of it. Okay. Now, something happened last week. In, where was this? Kenosha. There's an organization called the Riot Kitchen. R-I-O-T. Riot Kitchen. I'm not sure how many people are aware of that. This is a Seattle-based nonprofit that serves food to rioters. Okay? Remember Riot Ribs? Now it's Riot Kitchen. Okay. I'm going to show you a video right now, or Eric the Tech is going to show you a video right now. Well, this was after some investigation of funding. Where's money coming from? Where for supplies? For stuff like, oh, I don't know, bricks, rocks, instruments of, you know, riots, even food, supplies, medical supplies. Where's this coming from? Follow the money. Something interesting happened last week in Kenosha. And that actually prompted a statement by Riot Kitchen, Seattle-based company. Let's take a look at what prompted the statement I'm going to give you here in a moment. Let's take a look at this. Now, this is the third one on the first page. The third one from the top. We're getting our, it should say Video Riot Kitchen, Kenosha. And what I sent to you. It's all right, folks. Talk amongst yourselves. I'm really not that good at sending him stuff in order. Okay. So, you know the first two short videos that we played? This would be the third of the first two. Outside the Speedway. Where do you see that? No. Yeah, that one. Yeah, to hear what's going on. Stop the hammering. Here it is. In a minute. Now keep your eyes on this. What you have for the listeners on the radio, you've got right now two, soon to be more, police vehicles stopping a silver SUV or silver van. Just now you saw a police officer bust open the passenger side window. Now he's dragging that passenger out of that van.
Now using unmarked car, right?
Yes, without plates, by the way. And they're promptly arresting
him. I definitely am. I ain't moving.
This is at an intersection, by the way. This car is stopped, and it was stopped by the police at an intersection.
They just fucked these Black Lives Matter people up at Speedway for nothing. They wasn't doing shit. They wasn't doing nothing.
A little commentary there by the Muppet on the corner.
No, I got the vehicle. Go, 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 go.
So now they've got two in custody. Just to let you know, the driver's still in that vehicle. They're not interested in the driver.
That's the police inside.
It's a police. That'd be the police right there. Not an ambulance. Not an ambulance, but the police. All right. So now they just took.
And they got cars, jeeps, with no plates on them. All the police driving jeeps and cars with no plates.
Yeah, the police driving cars with no plates. Beep, beep. So that'd be the police, no plates, driving cars, arresting people. How dare they? So yeah, what this is, what you saw.
That was a pretty quick
takedown, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that.
Mm-hmm. The police got him.
They came out of nowhere. They probably pooped their pants. Dang it.
You know, yeah, I just wonder. I believed, okay, so the setup there, if you look at this, and I just, sometimes I wonder, you know, like the person taking that video. What was that person taking a video of? That person was actually taking a video. When you start looking at the profiles of the people and you get really deep into who these people are, where these videos come from, that person was taking a video of some Black Lives Matter people at that gas station, that speedway. Okay? There's some stuff going on there. And then, surprise, 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 these vehicles show up out of nowhere and stop that silver van, which I believe, although this is not shown, pulled out of that speedway and onto the road. And the police obviously were nearby waiting and had warrants. I'm absolutely positive of this, had warrants for the people inside. I'll tell you why. The cell phone footage of the incident showed officers rush out of black SUVs, surround a silver Toyota minivan belonging to, you ready? The nonprofit Seattle-based Riot Kitchen. That's right. Okay. The story, the article on this says, a Seattle-based nonprofit that serves food to rioters said Thursday, this is last week now, that several of its members were still in police custody in Kenosha, Wisconsin, after law enforcement officers sprung from unmarked cars and arrested them ahead of the riots in the city during the day. And these are my words, not during the day, and because of the riots at night. Again, these are all connected. Now, what does Baltimore have to do with Kenosha and Raleigh? And hang on. Cell phone footage of the incident showed officers rush out of black SUVs, surround the silver Toyota minivan belonging to the nonprofit, right next to the Speedway gas station. One officer aimed a gun at the van, while another officer bashed through the passenger side window. They could be seen pulling two people out of the vehicle and handcuffing them. Hate that when that happens. That's a felony stop, okay? That is called a felony stop, for those of you unfamiliar with the terms. The Kenosha Police Department later acknowledged that their officers led the operation, saying in a statement posted on Twitter last Thursday, and this is where it gets good, that they started tracking the group after receiving a tip about suspicious vehicles meeting on the edge of town.
The edge of town.
At the edge of town. Not the edge of night, but the edge of town.
Steep drop off there.
Yeah. Okay. Now, y'all remember... Y'all, I'm channeling Hillary Clinton here, right? Y'all, when she takes on that southern accent when she's talking to people down south, y'all. Now, do you folks remember us talking about our team investigating support organizations for these riots? And suddenly, well, now, don't you know? Somehow, at the edge of town, police notice a gathering of a couple of vehicles. Just saying. Yeah. Well, off camera, police officers arrested, about 6-7 more people. Now, this came from a statement by Riot Kitchen board member Jennifer Shurley. I don't know how to pronounce that. S-C-H-E-U-R-L-E. Okay. The reason I bring this up again, there is this vast network of funding. And I mean, funding operations. And I know you guys are saying, yeah, we know. We know. Well, remember that video segment there from the press secretary for the president of the United States, telling the American people in this press briefing, in this press conference, which, by the way, why don't they show this? The news channels show this. They don't. Because she's calling out Nadler and Pelosi and others saying, you know, look, this is happening. But so the Kenosha Police Department acknowledged that their officers led the operation, saying a statement posted on Twitter that they started tracking the group after receiving a tip. And this is about suspicious vehicles meeting on the edge of town. OK. Can I have a pregnant pause there? All right. Assisted by U.S. Marshals, they follow the group to a gas station in the northern part of Kenosha. Mm-hmm. Think about the woman on the corner taking video of what was going on at the gas station. There they watched the occupants fill up multiple fuel cans. What do you think they were going to do with those? In case somebody ran out of gas?
Put gas in the tractor.
So they could plow the fields, right? Wait, they don't plow the fields. I'm not allowed to say that, am I? Because of the plantation stuff. Huh. I know. Can I say this? I'll go out and plow the field. I'll work on the plantation. Me. But anyway. Gee whiz, suspecting that the occupants were preparing for criminal activity related to the unrest, they did what they had to do. They made contact, they investigated, and police recovered helmets, gas masks, protective vests, illegal fireworks, suspected drugs, controlled substances from the vehicles. Nine people were ultimately arrested on disorderly conduct charges. Police still have not released their names. Okay. Now, this, again, this has to do with Riot Kitchen, whose members were inconvenienced by the police. This head of Riot Kitchen described the members who were inconvenienced, handcuffed, taken away, as friends who helped run the organization. She said three were released Thursday, but others were still in jail. She and the other Riot Kitchen leaders, get this, didn't know where they were or who had taken them into custody until Thursday afternoon. Oh, the horror. Riot Kitchen. You ready for this? Riot Kitchen was founded amid the racial justice protests. Wait a minute. Racial justice protests. Is that what they are? Okay. In the Pacific Northwest earlier this summer, according to this Shirley, some of the members were driving in a caravan to D.C. when they decided to make a detour in Kenosha and join the riots. Hey, Eric, let's drive out to Portland and let's stop. Let's make a little detour in, Provo, Utah, so we can shoot some vehicles out there. What do you think? Yeah. Okay. Hang on. I'm going to bring this home. I promise. So now what do we have? Let's go to Breitbart, and this is also on HagmanReport.com. Department of Homeland Security is investigating the funding. Now, the acting secretary of DHS talked about this with Tucker Carlson yesterday. He shouldn't be. He shouldn't even be called the acting. He should be called the secretary. Period. Secretary. By the way, I was thinking about Tom Ridge, who. A former neighbor of mine, Tom Ridge, yesterday, driving past his house, not too far from me, his old house, when he used to live in Erie, Pennsylvania. But anyway, let's show the video with, this is featured on Breitbart. It's also on HagmanReport.com, but this is DHS investigating the funding. This is a video with Tucker Carlson. Go ahead and take a look at this.
The DHS, Department of Homeland Security, and the Justice Department are creating a joint operations center to, quote, investigate violent left-wing civil unrest, and there's an awful lot of that, despite what the liars tell you. Chad Wolf runs the Department of Homeland Security. He's the acting secretary. We're happy to have him on tonight. Mr. Secretary, thanks so much for coming on. Joe Biden today threatened, announced, predicted, choose your verb, that if the president's reelected, we will see more violence. Are you worried about that?
I'm not Tucker, and that's I would say that's a delusional statement. The idea that the president or this administration or the Department of Homeland Security is somehow the reason or the cause behind this violence is just absurd. Look, the department's been at this since early July, particularly in Portland, addressing some of this violent rioting and looting that was occurring, an anarchist targeting a federal building in Portland. So we've been at this for some time. We understand we've been caused or having been described as causing this violence. We know that's not the case. And now, before they ignored it, it then became DHS's problem, and now they're saying it's the administration and, of course, the president that's now causing this. So, again, all of these statements are absurd. They're not true. I think most reasonable Americans understand what's going on out there. And really the cause of all of this is local officials, state officials, not taking this seriously enough from day one. When there's violence in your community, you need to restore law and order right away. We've seen that. It will work. We've seen it in Kenosha after several days. It's working. Places like Portland and other places need to take that same advice. They need to bring that law and order back to their streets so that the residents of those cities can feel safe as they go about their business every day.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. In the meantime, do you think Department of Homeland Security is getting the help it needs from the Justice Department? Why haven't we seen the leaders of Antifa and BLM arrested and charged for conspiracy under, say, RICO, like the heads of the mafia families were?
Well, this is something I've talked to the AG personally about, and I know that they are working on it. Look, we've seen about 300 arrests across this country regarding civil unrest and protesting, violent protesting, I would say, criminal protesting, criminal rioting occur, about 300 arrests. About a third of those or 100 of those arrests have been in Portland specifically, and I know the Department of Justice has charged about 74 or 75 individuals there in Portland with different federal crimes, and we'll continue to see how those investigations are going. Department of Justice is also targeting and investigating the head of these organizations, the individuals that are paying for these individuals to move across the country. What we know, Tucker, is that we have seen groups and individuals move from Portland to other parts of the country.
Right.
We had about 175 arrests in Kenosha. Almost 100 of them were from out of state. So we know they're moving around. We've seen them in D.C., in Sacramento, and elsewhere. They're organized. We've seen similar tactics being used from Portland and other cities across the country as well. So we know that there's organization. I know the Department of Justice is also looking at that as well.
You're not allowed to fund crime, of course. I mean, if I do business with Iran, I go to jail. But we have domestic terrorism on a greater scale than we've had in my lifetime, 50 years. And the funders of this have not been exposed by the federal government, and they haven't been punished. And I'm confused as to why.
Again, I would say that, again, the Department of Justice, who has the lead in all of those investigations, are certainly moving as quickly as possible. Again, it's something that I talk with the Attorney General about almost on a weekly basis. The Department of Homeland Security, we're doing our role. We're making sure that the investigations that we're involved in, we're getting that information over to the Department of Justice, to the FBI, to those criminal investigators that are doing their job. Like you, Tucker, I wish that moved in a little quicker fashion. We'll continue to see how that is. But again, this administration, this president, is committed to holding individuals accountable. I think once folks start to realize that if you want to riot, you want to loot, you want to do some of these other criminal acts that we see around this country, there's going to be consequences for that. And we're going to continue to move down that road.
Okay. That was Tucker Carlson with Chad Wolf, the acting director or the director of the Department of Homeland Security, talking about the money, the funding about with these riots, which connects to what you saw, that felony stop takedown riot kitchen, of course, in Kenosha. That's directly related. Now, again, I want you to keep in mind what you first saw, that video, that lone man walking down the street and that lone individual striking him with a rock or a block or whatever it was, a brick, and that was all set up. They were taping that. Think as well what happened in Portland, okay? Just now, the Portland incident, the shooting there, think, just keep that in the back of your mind in addition to everything else you saw during this broadcast. Now, let's bump a little bit to an FBI bulletin. This is all related, okay? We saw this, by the way. In fact, I reported on this, I think, right with Randy Taylor, or if not with him, then shortly after speaking with him and we spoke together. If you go to the FBI, okay, there's a website, ABC7 out of Chicago. If you can go there, Eric the Tech. There is a federal intelligence alert which was obtained by ABC. It was issued by the FBI. And here's what the alert is in a nutshell. Organizations are now focused on setting up the police for ambushes. And you might say, wait a minute, didn't you just talk about that with the chlorine thing? Well, that was some time ago. This is different. Now, what we're seeing in this situational informational report, FBI officials now in Chicago says that members of gangs, organized gangs, primarily, now this is off script from the FBI bulletin, but primarily organized gangs comprised of people from out of the country who are into, who were brought into, allowed into the United States, unfettered access to the United States, are working with locals to set up police in order to ambush them en masse. The purpose is to catch on film an officer drawing his or her weapon on any person, okay, and then have an ambush team stand by to shoot at the police officers and kill them. This, the reason, to garner national media attention. Happening now. So tomorrow, next week, next month, I don't know when, but if you see this take place, understand that. But now this has been issued to all the police departments, as far as I know, as far as I've been able to tell, by the FBI. It should have made it down through the ranks. Hopefully every police officer is aware of this. Draw your gun, point it at a suspect, and that in turn will create the situation. Now, the suspect could very well be unarmed. The suspect could be just the suspect would be an operative of some type. But the intent is, once the police officer draws their weapon, to shoot and kill the police officers, and then use this in national media. Use this on all of the, much like Al Qaeda did, okay, with their recruiting videos. You remember those, a long time ago? Okay. You saw the setup. Remember the lone man walking? Hit with the brick. The person shooting that video knew exactly what was going to happen. They selected the target, they selected the assailant, and they videoed that crime. This is very serious. This is uber serious. The Chicago Police Department Superintendent David Brown said that there's an overall sense of lawlessness. And this extends into or to the against the police department. ACAB, all cops are bastards. Okay, you see that everywhere. You see the sentiment being ramped up against the police departments. This is the next level. Okay, now, again, I want to just... I want to just make sure I'm getting this in the right order here. Okay. Stand by. Okay. Let's go to, we're going to take a slight diversion here. Let's go to Biden. who can't keep his thoughts straight. I found this very interesting because we're up against a general election, President Donald Trump versus Joe Biden, to show you, and there's so many examples out there where Joe Biden, I mean, you can see where Joe Biden really isn't, as Jack Cashel said, an empty suit, and they're pushing him out there. It's crazy when you look at and listen to some of the things he's saying. But take a look at this video segment, and I'm sure you can find so many more of Joe Biden talking yesterday. He's worse than I am. Go ahead and watch this.
COVID has taken this year, just since the outbreak, has taken more than 100 years. Look, here's the lives. When you think about it.
Well, what the hell was that? Eric the Tech, what was that?
Doug, today, I-N-O-U-Y.
You know.
A, B, C, D, F, G.
Look, I'm not the best. Sometimes I can't even form a coherent thought sentence if you paid me, okay? Because I got so much going on upstairs, you know, trying to get everything.
It's like a speak and spell running out of battery power.
Exactly. Play that one more time if you don't mind. We got to cue it back up there.
COVID has taken this year, just since the outbreak, has taken more than 100 years. Look, here's the lives. When you think about it.
You know, I don't even want to laugh at that. I mean, it's not right. I mean, we all have members of, I mean, my family, suffering from dementia and Alzheimer's, and it's just a horrible, horrible disease. And you always, in fact, I've got a friend I graduated from the seminary with, I had visited, and, suffering from dementia and Alzheimer's, and my age, by the way, used to drink Diet Coke, like Diet Pepsi, constantly. But I spoke with him, and I got to tell you, I was almost in tears after I visited with him. But to do this to a man like Joe Biden, or to do this to anyone, Joe Biden, I mean, it's just crazy. So what's up their sleeve? Because how can you have a leader? How can you hide this? How can you hide that from if they truly expect him to be elected? How can you hide that? Well, logic would tell you they've got something else planned. All right, now let me address this a little bit more. Hang on a minute. You've got a pro-Biden firm right now preparing the public for voter fraud in the sense that they are going to tell you this pro-Biden a PR firm. They're going to tell you that, well, it looks like Trump won, but hold on a second. It looks like he won by a landslide. But wait, we haven't counted in the mail-in ballots yet. And when they do, they're going to say, look at this, Biden won. Right now, there are individuals and groups who are preparing for Hang on just one second. I had this, and I want to make sure I've got this properly cited. Stand by. But essentially the same thing. On election night, you've got people who are attempting to prepare others by saying, well, you know what? It'll look like a Donald Trump win, but really it's not. We're going to take it to the limit in terms of fighting this win. We're going to litigate the hell out of it. and we are going to cause a constitutional crisis at that level. Now, you had a Reuters article last week, or yeah, I think it was a Reuters article. The military is saying we're not going to get involved in anything election-related. But this is what they're counting on. They're counting on a leftist win, when in fact what you saw on your screen is ramping up more and more and more support for President Trump. It's backfiring, as Jack Cashel said yesterday. To an extent, it's backfiring. Now, I don't necessarily agree with Jack 100% that it's backfiring, but I believe that it's increasing the divide. Okay, one more thing that relates to everything, and this has to do with Lieutenant General Flynn and Sidney Powell. Actually, one and a half things. But let's take a look at the latest. This is Sidney Powell. She's such a great lady, by the way. Such a great lady. I wish I could tell you she's a great lady. And she's got integrity like you can't believe. I mean, if she called me up and if she said, you know what, there's a space alien sitting down at a Denny's, you know, in front of me, I'd believe her. I'm serious. That's, in my view, that's the kind of integrity she's got. But listen to what she says to Lou Dobbs, and listen to what Lou Dobbs' reaction is. And this conversation is fabulous, but this is all going to tie everything together. Go ahead and play this.
Joining us now is Sidney Powell. Terrific American, also General Flynn's attorney, and we're delighted to have you with us. I could only imagine when you got that ruling by this court, but what your face must have looked like, Sidney. I can tell you this, I think most Americans are furious at what now they see as judicial corruption. This is outrageous what we're watching. Your thoughts?
Well, they certainly are getting an education in what has become of our federal judiciary, Lou. I call this the Michael Flynn exception to the rule of law. The courts made it up as it went along for the majority decision. The dissents by Judges Rao and Henderson are excellent. I would commend those to everyone's reading as they actually rely on the law. But, yeah, it's quite remarkable.
So what happens now? It sounds as though the appellate court just said to the district court judge, you know, it's okay. Why don't you play prosecutor here and carry out a case against the Justice Department to see whether or not, for the first time, as far as we know, the Justice Department doesn't have the right to dismiss a case. And General Flynn has, by the way, no constitutional standing of any kind, and the hell with the man, because he just served the country honorably and with great distinction and valor. And so just try to persecute him as long as you possibly can, 4 years now in the effort.
That's the essential determination of the court. It's hard to read it any other way. It's nothing short of appalling, and these are important constitutional issues at stake here, not just for Michael Flynn, but for the country as a whole and for the Department of Justice and how the Department of Justice functions vis-a-vis the federal courts. So I would not say this is the end of this. I think there is going to be more litigation to come, unfortunately, but we'll keep going until the court gets it right.
Is there, before I ask some of the procedural questions here, is there any reason why we should expect anything other than Emmett Sullivan to continue his outrage against General Flynn and persist in this?
No, absolutely not. I mean, he's made very clear his hatred of General Flynn, and he relied on extrajudicial sources from the news media and from a Washington Post op-ed by the man he chose to step in and pile on against General Flynn in the process of making these rulings. And the Court of Appeals just rubber stamps whatever he wants to do.
Is there any point at which the Chief Justice of the United States is so embarrassed and so ashamed of what has become of the federal judiciary and its obvious political corruption that without prompting from any quarter, he would reach down to the appellate court and to this district court judge and say, do what is right and end this now.
I wish he would, but I don't know that he'll do that without a petition for writ of certiorari. But that may be the direction we have to go in next. We're considering several alternatives right now.
Including seeking an emergency determination by the Supreme Court?
Yes, definitely.
All right. Now, you heard that, obviously. You've got this absolutely out-of-control judge, Emmett Sullivan. And many people uplifted him. Many conservatives said, hey, he's a good guy. And at one point, it appeared that he was. What happened? Now he's doubling down against Lieutenant General Flynn and lost in an appellate court. And you can see the dismay by Sidney Powell, his attorney, and Lou Dobbs. What the hell is going on at the Department of Justice? All right. What I'd like you to do, before I tie this up, if you go to HagmanReport.com, there's an article that I reposted, gave credit to Trevor Loudon, New Zeal. It's at HagmanReport.com. If you can, Erica, show that on the video. No, that one will come next. There you go. Communists in Congress. Right now, there are about 65 members of Congress who have direct ties to or are self-proclaimed communists, democratic socialists, or have direct ties to the Communist Party. That's right. They're listed in that article. It links back to New Zeal, Trevor Loudon. But if you wonder what's going on in terms of the fight against President Trump and what to expect on a congressional level when it comes to the fight this election season, because the Congress gets involved, may get involved, depending on the outcome and the circumstances and situation. Just think about those 65 plus members of Congress, and the list is there. Okay? And Trevor Loudon does a great job of outlining the links, whether it's Cuba, whether it's Venezuela, whether it's to the Middle East, Hamas, Hezbollah, CARE, you name the group, it's there. Trevor Loudon, New Zeal, the link is at the top of that article. But there's the list of names. Okay.
I see a lot of California in here.
Sure, California.
Represent.
Okay, so now think back again. Think back to that lone man I showed you at the beginning walking down the street and getting smacked on the head. I mean, hit hard on the head with a brick. Move to the riots and the revolving door of prosecution or non-prosecution. Think with Sidney Powell, Lieutenant General Flynn, the absolute insanity there. There's an article on Conservative Treehouse that was posted yesterday by Sundance. Both Jack Haschell and I like the Conservative Treehouse, and we talk about that a lot. But the article is titled, Portland Police, FBI, and U.S. Department of Justice Refuse to Arrest Antifa Murder Suspect Michael Reinhold because he supports Joe Biden and Black Lives Matter. Now, that's a pretty incendiary headline. But think about this. We saw over the weekend an execution-style murder of a Donald Trump supporter in the streets. You saw it. I saw it. We saw Donald Trump supporter, President Trump supporter, Aaron J. Danielson, murdered by, allegedly, Michael Reinhold on the streets of Portland. This murder was caught on camera. It's gone on video. And everyone, including thousands of people who watch social media, know exactly killed him, and that person allegedly is Michael Reinhold. Folks, I want to tell you something. Read the article at the Conservative Treehouse. I guess I ran out of time. We are seeing the dissolution, intentional dissolution, of our Justice Department. Not prosecuting anyone. You're seeing certainly, when you saw the riot kitchen, that was to verify that our information was correct, is correct. But what's going to happen to them when they get to court? Not much. And on the larger scale, larger sense, look at Lieutenant General Flynn. There will be more. They're not done. And it's only going to get worse. If you're saying that Donald Trump is going to win, I believe you. But will that victory be accepted by the left? And if not, will it cause a constitutional crisis? And allow the left anarchist just free reign across the United States? That's tying together all of the loose ends. That's what I believe is taking place. And by the way, on the Hageman Report, real quick on HagemanReport.com. Yeah, stretch out that music. On HagemanReport.com, there's a, I want to give a hat tip to U.S. Marshals working in Ohio with local authorities, rescued 25 missing and endangered children from Ohio, Cuyahoga County. Have a cup of coffee. I can't really say this, but I'm going to say it anyway. Have a cup of coffee from HagemanStore.com on us, because the proceeds do help organizations directly involved in that. Think Russ Dizdar. Think Craig Sawyer. Cuyahoga County, Ohio. Just over the border. Going to be right back with Stan Dale. I want to thank you so much for your listening. Thank you so much for your support. Hopefully that made sense to you. There was a lot of in between the lines stuff there I had to give you. In between the lines. In between the music notes. All right, good, right back.
Mainstream media won't. You're listening to the Hageman and Hageman Report on the Global Star Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Hageman Report, where truth can't be silenced. I want to thank you so much for your support. You know, I mentioned at the beginning or at the end of last hour about our coffee, HagemanStore.com. Coffee, your purchases. We help support organizations like Craig Sawyer and Russ Dizdar. Russ Dizdar, of course, located in Northeast Ohio, thereabouts. Okay, interestingly enough, guess what? By the way, there it is on your screen, HagemanStore.com. And proceeds go to these groups. Now, it's interesting because on HagemanReport.com is a story about Operation Safety Net. And this was centered in Northeast Ohio. And this was responsible in the saving of 25 rescue or missing and endangered children from Ohio in what remains an ongoing effort called Operation Safety Net. Now, you know that we've been involved, Russ Dizdar, myself, Craig Sawyer, have been involved in initiatives, boots on the ground, not talking, not reading headlines, not talking about how President Trump has got this, you know, task force, not talking about some fake military Pentagon task force rescuing, you know, 2,100 children from tunnels. That's BS. This is reality. This is boots on the ground, investigative reality. Okay. And the reason I know this, I'll leave it at that. Period. The missing children range in age between 13 and 16. They were found across the state of Ohio, and as far away as Miami, Florida, by the way. And these were horrible. These children were abused. They were neglected. They were involved in human trafficking or subjected to human trafficking. And this, you can ask Pete Elliott, U.S. Marshal Pete Elliott, about this. He gave a statement to WOIO television. He said that sometimes the situation they go to, believe it or not, may be better than the situations they left from. Meaning, how about parents prostituting their own children? All right. Now, this came on the heels of Operation Not Forgotten that rescued 26 missing children and located an additional 13 in Georgia and Florida. That, I don't know too much about. This, I do. And so does Russ and so does Craig. I'll leave it at that. And thank you. Thank you. I'm not taking any credit. I'm just saying thank you to the supporters of this platform. Again, you can be sure that we're more than a radio show. That this is an investigative agency. We're investigators. We work with police. We work with the marshals. We work with state and local police. We don't read headlines. Oh, we do, but we don't depend on that. All right. Did you know, obviously, September 1st, that's today. September 1st today. Happy September. Where'd summer go? Did we ever have a summer? It didn't seem like it. But anyway, did you know that September is National Life Insurance Awareness Month? Did you know that? But with everything that's going on right now, did you even think about that? Some people aren't even aware they can get life insurance right now. They think everything's shut down and can't get insurance, life insurance at all. Well, the good news is that it's still easy to shop for life insurance right now. And if you have loved ones, depending on your income, I hope you get life insurance. You need it. Here's what you need to do. Very simply, step one, head to policygenius.com. That's policygenius.com. In minutes, you can work out how much coverage you need, and you can even compare quotes from top insurers to find your best price. The second step is apply for your lowest price. Step three, the Policy Genius team will handle all of the paperwork and red tape. Folks, Policy Genius works for you. They don't work for the insurance company. They work for you. So if you hit any speed bumps during the application process, they'll take care of everything for you. That kind of service has earned Policy Genius a 5-star rating across over 1,600 reviews on Trustpilot and Google. Now, here's what you need to do. If you need life insurance, and you do, head to policygenius.com right now to get started. You could save $1,500 or more a year by comparing quotes on their marketplace. Policy Genius, when it comes to insurance, it's nice to get it right. Policygenius.com. That's policygenius.com. Let me know when Stan's ready, and we'll get him on. Okay, no worries. But as I was saying last hour, and I mentioned conservative treehouse as well, what we're seeing right now is the absolute worst scenario for this country as a consequence of the leftists, the communists in Congress, the leftists, the communist, socialist, democratic socialists who are running the Department of Justice, the Hillary and Obama holdovers from the Department of Justice, those who have infiltrated and remain there. You are seeing death and murder that is now defined by politics. This is transparently obvious. When you've got a situation where you've got on video an execution-style murder in Portland, and so far there's nothing going on in terms of arrests. Oh, there's an investigation, right? Okay. This is kind of like a lay down case. I mean, you lay down the information, it's pretty much right there. Writes Sundance, we are now entering an era where Thunderdome rules apply on the streets of U.S. cities. Again, first hour, think of that very first video. Think of how many women on the New York City platform. I mentioned this yesterday. A guy jumps a woman on the subway platform, jumps on top of this woman, attempts to rape her in front of everyone, in plain view. It's on video, surveillance video. When you have a revolving door for anarchists, when you have judges, when you have a corrupt Department of Justice, I think back to the Department of Justice, and I think back to the mantra, trust Sessions. Really? I think back to even trust the plan. While I agree 100% in people needing to become better informed, I don't agree with people becoming complacent because they're thinking that everything is under control, that there's some sort of back, you know, this white hat, white horse force that's handling everything. Don't be complacent. Understand that we're in this together, but we're in this alone. There's no one coming to help us. It's us. If it's Tuesday, it's Tuesdays with Stan Dale from standale.com, EMPShield.com as well, EMPShield.com/Hagman. You know, if you're concerned about EMPs, well, EMPShield.com, that'll protect your equipment and make sure that when the grid comes back up, your equipment is operational. There it is right there. And in some places, you know, EMPs may not be equal opportunity or equal effective EMPs, all right? So invest in best investment you can make, EMPShield.com/Hagman, $50 off. Stan Dale from StanDale.com. Stan, how are you, sir?
Oh, good. You?
Let me check. Yeah, I'm okay.
Yeah, sorry. I had a few technical glitches here this morning. I think I've ironed out now. Okay,
gotcha.
So a lot of news out there.
Yes, there is. Yeah.
Where do you want to start? Middle East, weather, sun, what?
Let's try. I don't have a magic eight ball here. Or you know what? You start wherever you want, and I'll follow along.
Okay. Well, the on our show images page off of standale.com, slide 52, you don't see daily news and probably not even weekly news about Jared Kushner and what he's doing. But we know from months before that he's been over there for President Trump to organize a peace treaty between Israel and the surrounding Arab nations. Now, you know, last week, the UAE signed an agreement with Israel, and the whole deal was brokered by, surprise, Jared Kushner. And if you go to that slide I was telling you about, which is 52, you'll see an article about what he's doing over there. And he's not talking just with the UAE or, you know, Oman or any of those. He's talking with all of them behind the scenes. And I think we're going to see this peace treaty come together where all of the Arab nations, including the people of the Palestinian location, will sign an agreement with Israel. But what I'm afraid of is that they're organizing a division, you know, a two-state solution. That's the only thing that the Palestinians will agree to. Now, the Palestinians are not really a country. They are a gathering of people grouped together and calling themselves the Palestinians. They are really not a nation. In Daniel, he does talk about the Antichrist at this time will sign an agreement between Israel and many countries, which we assume are all the Arab countries around them. But the guy that signs that is going to be the Antichrist. There are going to be a number of people signing it, but he will be among them, the Antichrist. Now, is that going to be Mohammed bin Salman? I still think so. But when Daniel says he'll make this agreement with a small people, with the help of a small people who have come to power, that perfectly fits Palestinians, because they aren't really a country. They're a group of people run by a gang, you know, a terrorist, but they're still just a small people, and they hold the balance of power in the Middle East. So to placate them, they're going to divide Israel, and the Israeli Arab nations will comply and say, okay, that's a deal. This worries me a great deal, because it's dividing Israel, you know, by political boundaries and whatever. But you know that as soon as you divide Israel, whoever's responsible for that, they're going to divide you. Now, Israel, the leadership there under Premier Netanyahu, is, you know, they're making that decision. The United States has been orchestrating the deal from behind the scene for months, if not years. And we're going to see, because he's orchestrated all that, that the United States will divide if he divides Israel. Now, is it going to be a division by, say, large, massive earthquakes along the New Madrid that divides us into left and right, United States, east and west? Or is it going to be a division of the people, like a severe civil war? I mean, that is probably more probable at the moment than the great earthquake down the New Madrid. However, I'm not ruling that out. So I'm just saying that watch within 24 to 48 hours. If we sign that deal with Israel and the surrounding Arab nations, and it divides, physically divides or politically divides Israel, then we're going to see something dividing us very severely. And, so just keep your eyes open if that happens.
Now, you're referencing the, peace to prosperity deal. Okay. How would this be accepted? I've done some research along these lines, and how would this be accepted by the Israelis? I don't see how they would accept any kind of division.
Well, you know, a lot of the Israelis wouldn't, but because Netanyahu's got, and his party and his coalition have got the power to do it at the moment, they can do it and override the wishes of the people in general. That's the political system over there. It's a very fragile thing because it depends upon several parties getting together and forming a coalition to get enough seats in the Knesset. But there are people, you know, that have been demonstrating, I guess, rather peacefully compared to what we get over here, and demonstrating against, you know, splitting Israel into, you know, two political entities, or, you know, giving the Palestinian state statehood, but dividing part of the land of Israel for them.
Okay, so as I understand it, and maybe this is just anecdotal, this would put the Al-Aqsa Mosque under Israeli control, right?
Well, that's probably the way it's going to be. And there are some interesting things happening over there on the Temple Mount, but the Israelis, if they get control of it, Jordan has to agree with that. We'll get to slide 54 in a minute, where Jordan's prime minister, you know, has his thoughts on this.
Right.
The peace deal. Jordan and Saudi Arabia are the two guys you want to see sign this agreement. Assuming, of course, that the agreement would work well and everybody would be happy, Israel and all that kind of stuff, but there are so many behind-the-scenes deals going. When I say behind-the-scenes, they're not reporting it in the press very much at all. They're trying to be low-key. Sale of, you know, F-35s to the UAE or, you know, any of the Arab countries, except for Iran, of course. We're not going to deal with them. But right now, Jordan has control of the Temple Mount. So under the new deal, Israel would have control, or at least be able to access the Israeli portion of the Temple Mount, which is now going to be a little bit bigger than we thought before. Look at slide 50. Look at slide 50.
All right.
Slide 50 says, mystery, new pit opens in Temple Mount floor. Now, this is over the southern part of the Temple Mount. And it's a tile broke free and fell down a hole. You know, is it a tunnel? Is it a room? Who does it belong to? Now, if Israel gets control of that area, which would probably be nice, they may be able to find the original instruments for the Temple of Solomon. This is going to cause a lot of angst with the people now ruling the Arabs, the Muslims now ruling that part of the Temple Mount. You can see a picture of it there in the article, and then a little video that gives you, a bit of a stir around to see what it is. But this is going to affect the treaty. And this just popped up by an act of God. Somebody stepped on it too hard or something, and bang, this tile falls down, and whoa, here's an unknown chamber, a tunnel down underneath the Temple Mount. And if I understand vaguely where it is on the southeastern part of the Temple Mount, it's right over where Solomon's stables used to be. It depends on how far south it is. But anyway, it's going to be a very interesting thing to dig up, and this may well affect the peace treaty. Wouldn't it be cool if down in that place they find the original temple artifacts, the gold and brass and all the things they made, and even perhaps the Holy of Holies place. Who knows? It's further south than I would have put it using what satellite imagery we got 4 or 5 years ago, showing the eroded footprints in the stone, as a way to determine where the temple was when it was operational and the Israelis were doing their worship ceremonies. You could see it was leading to a path more central, but to the right of the Dome of the Rock. So this is, they say, the southern part, so I don't know what it's going to hold for us, but I think it will be a surprise and a major influence on peace in the Middle East.
Interesting.
Well, yeah, and go to slide 54. 54, it's, King Abdullah. He's not a prime minister, he's a king, yeah, right. And he's now saying he wants Israel to engage in direct and serious talks after the peace treaty was announced with the UAE. Now, this is kind of weird because King Abdullah, he's been very anti-turning over the custodianship of the Temple Mount. And the peace treaty between him and Israel that they had is now kind of defunct. It's run its time. So his decision and the decision of Mohammed bin Salman of Saudi Arabia and the Palestinian Authority, all those three there are very important. And you see all of them coming together rather piecemeal. And I think we're going to get a big surprise when suddenly probably President Trump announces that Jared has orchestrated them all to sign this peace treaty. So one of those signers, when it does happen, is going to be the Antichrist. I lean toward Mohammed bin Salman, but young Jared Kushner has direct descendancy from a tribe over in Israel, the northern part of Israel. So we just have to watch and see what happens. It's going to be a really interesting time. And before the Antichrist is revealed, if I understand it correctly, and I put that if, I believe that the Bible says that the rapture will occur either at the moment the Antichrist is revealed or just before. It's a little bit of ambiguity in the way you translate the Greek on that, but anyway, very important time. Keep your eye on the news, that's all.
Doesn't the Bible reference a confirmation of a peace treaty as opposed to the creation of a peace treaty? And again, I don't know. I'm asking.
Right. It's signing one that's already done.
Right.
So it doesn't mean the guy who is the Antichrist orchestrated. He will be one of the signers. I don't even think that Jared Kushner has to sign that deal as a broker. So we watch the heads of state who sign that and see what happens after that.
Right.
But if that treaty divides Israel, watch for the next couple of days what happens to us. It's going to be interesting.
Well, we're already in that divisive mentality here. I mean, I don't know without full out shooting more than we've seen. I mean, without full-out civil war, how can we be more divided? I've never seen a country so divided when the left has, gotten their back up and saying, okay, we're not going to let things go forward. We're going to just we're just going to cause all this mayhem and such. It's pretty divided, and it's divided along. I mean, we've never been so racially divided, you know, the way we are right now. But it's to me, it's a manufactured racial division. But anyway, yeah. So, well, maybe it'll be reflective then geographically.
Yeah. Well, perhaps, and certainly a New Madrid fault line ripping apart the United States down the Mississippi River, you know, basin there. Would put hardships on us as far as crop and equipment and people shuffling back, of course, on land. However, looking at the facets, the sides of an American conflict, like the Hopi said to us, to Holly and I, you know, back in '96, the United States will be divided in civil war on multiple fronts, not just religious, you know, Islamic against Christian or Jew, but also against rich, against poor, you know, persons of color against the white race, let's say Democrat against Republican. You can just look at all the various things and, it tells you that we are going to be a house so divided that you could just run out in the street and point at somebody and they're probably going to be against you, you know, in this civil conflict. That's probably going to be what erupts. And you can certainly see the signs of this now as we approach this election for president, that the division is so intense, so widespread and getting angrier and shots are being fired. People are being killed over it now that as we get to election day or slightly after the election, and I think it doesn't matter whether Trump wins or not. No. We're going to see all these things come to a head and people are going to have outright shooting in the streets and attacks on, well, it'll probably be attacks from the left onto the right because we're Christian Jewish groups and, you know how, you know, Pelosi and the rest of them hate us. So we're not only deplorable, we're expendable. So it's going to be something that happens probably right around the election time and a few days after. That'll be us divided now. So we think that the peace treaty, though, will be signed, an agreement, whatever you want to call it, will be signed before the election so that President Trump can use that as, you know, an accomplishment to cement his being reelected. I don't know, but we're in such a volatile time and so many parts of the puzzle written in Daniel and the book of Revelation that we have to know that something's about to happen, really serious and catastrophic in a lot of ways. So we just have to watch. And in fact, let's say that President Trump wins the election and the treaty gets signed. The Bible says, you know, when they shall cry peace and safety, then so shall sudden destruction be upon them. Are we going to say, oh, wow, we've got President Trump back in. We're peaceful, we're secure, you know, he's taking care of us, and we've got this peace in the Middle East, and everything's wonderful. That would sound to me like filling that warning, that prophecy. Then shall sudden destruction come upon them, and I think that's going to be upon Israel and us. I don't believe this Arab agreement is going to stick. If you've studied the Quran, you know that they're allowed to lie through their teeth to the unbelievers, to the non-Muslims. So they can sign this contract, and it's not binding in their religion. UAE says, okay, look, I want a bunch of your F-35s. That's probably not the best thing, but as soon as they turn against Israel, they'll have our, you know, most advanced jets that are in service at the moment, their fighter jets. They'll have them to attack Israel. I was trying to find something here, and I've got it clicked to the wrong thing. Sorry about that. That picture with the jet doesn't go to where I wanted to, I don't think. Let me just check something here. Sorry about that. I had a little bit of trouble with my links today. All right. That's enough on the Middle East. Let's dive over to – oh, here's a really good thing for – the believers in a relationship to look at slide 46. If you get to that and look at the picture, this is, you know, the White House President Trump's mouthpiece there in the news reports, you know, in the daily briefings or whatever. She says, I believe God put me in this place under President Trump for a purpose. And she has to commute, I think it's from Florida to there. I don't know how many days she stays there and goes home, but it's a long commute. But this girl here, this young woman, went to Harvard, got a law degree. She also fought, realized that her family have the gene that has definite breast cancer. So she had a mastectomy, a double mastectomy. And she's just a brilliant mouthpiece, but a Christian lady. And she puts that across. She's a press secretary, and she is strong on her faith, belief in Jesus, and the love of the United States. So you can see why Trump would have been attracted to her. You click on the link, it'll take you to a video where you get to see the history of her and, you know, all these things I just mentioned. But what a wonderful thing to find that this girl is there in the White House and making Christian-based announcements and responses to them. The fake media that are there. I think she's just going to be and has been a wonderful mouthpiece for God and for Jesus. Isn't it cool?
I played a rare Eric played a clip in my request for from her when she commented on. Let me just see here. She was she addressed she called out CNN's Chris Cuomo, Don Lemon, Pelosi, and then the squalor squad, as I like to call it, you know, and their accusations about what we see being Donald Trump's America. And before she walked off, she said, that's like the arsonist blaming the firefighter. And then she walked from the podium. I mean, you talk about a class act. In my view, I mean, you've got she addressed Pelosi downplaying the violence. Nadler saying that it's a myth that, you know, Antifa is violent. Chris Cuomo saying that, show me where it says the protesters are supposed to be peaceful. She said, well, it's in the Constitution, and she's right. She's a in my view, marvelous. And I believe, look, like you do, God uses each one of us for a specific purpose, or we're called for a specific job, a specific task. And it's just
And as I say, we're getting so close to the moment when the tribulation will start, so close that when you have a person like her there in that spot to witness to so many millions, hundreds of millions of people, because a lot of people overseas look at us. It's just brilliant. I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I hope that the President Trump's administration gets back in and she gets to keep, you know, telling all this kind of stuff. I've just noticed that the link in the next one I want to talk about, Life After Death, is again wrong. The program I'm using here is an old program, and because of the new way to update our websites, it's just so complex that we didn't use it. And I apologize. I'm just can't get that link changed at the moment. But if you look up, tomorrow morning, I'll have this done tonight after the show. I'll link it properly. But it's talking about a woman who died on the operating table, had a out-of-body experience, a near-death experience. And the article talks about her arguing with Jesus because she went up to heaven and saw him there and said, look, I'm not ready to go yet. I got kids to take care of. I'm not coming here yet. And there was an interaction between her and Jesus, and then she came back. But the brief pregnancy they have of her life experience there was worth reading. Again, proving that there was life after death, that at least, you know, for all of us that have had that near-death experience. The physicians and a number of scientists say, no, it's the release of a certain chemical, that's right. A long name, that causes you to see this. But I don't see how that chemical can let you see into the future, which I got to see in my out-of-body experience, what happened to these people that you've had interaction with through your life, in your life review. I'm just thinking there was something else I thought about when I was reading that article, that people see, they have the near-death experience, they're not always the same kind of relationship, not just pretty colors and look at what you think you know heaven will be like or something like that. There are more specific things I'll have to get that together and maybe do a story on that too next week. It just, you know, I don't know how they can look at that and say that all these near-death experiences resulted from a chemical release as you're dying. But anyway, I guess they're...
There's quite a diverse... Oh, I don't know. How would you describe it? They're not all the same. I mean, there are some common factors in these, but they're not all identical. I mean, I've read where some have not so pleasant experiences, and then others have, you know, not so bad experiences, and others have blissful experiences.
One guy went to hell, and he came back into his body, and then he died again. He did it like two or three times, and he was deep into hell, you know, things clawing at him in the dark and you know, ugly, you know, monstrous-looking beings, and he wasn't a believer. And when he came back, of course, he had to rethink about it. He didn't want to go there. I just think that, well, of course, in that case, you could say that he read a book or something or saw a picture where demons, you know, hell was full of demons or whatever.
You know, if I wasn't a Christian, if I didn't believe, you know, in heaven and hell, I'm the kind of guy, I'd want to err on the side of caution, so I'd kind of want to be a believer, you know, even if I mean, I'm not sure how to explain it, but I certainly, eternity is a heck of a long time, you know, I wouldn't want to spend eternity in hell or anywhere near hell. I don't know.
No, well, there's the carrot and the apple, you know, the stick and the apple, whatever, you know. Good Lord gives everybody a chance, especially that guy we're just talking about. You know, he got a chance to see where he would be going. And for him, it made it pretty easy to make the decision to be saved. I wouldn't wish that kind of a near-death experience on anybody, because it must have been very, very frightening from what he described. But yeah, something needs to shock people into awareness of the need to be saved by Jesus and the blood he shed for us.
And you know something, Stan, and maybe this is kind of off the mark a little bit, or off topic, but I really believe that there is a direct correlation between intellect and faith. And I don't know how many people have thought about this, but I believe those with a higher intellect, and maybe I'm totally wrong, but those people who have a higher intellect have faith almost by default, if you know what I mean. Because you look around, did all of this just happen by some cosmic accident, some primordial soup? I mean, I know of a sad sap who calls the Bible a fairy tale and Jesus a dead Jew, okay, which is very offensive. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, number one, I'm glad I'm glad I'm not that person. But I also believe that there's a connectivity there between the intellect and faith. I don't know. Do you know what I mean? And do you see any direct correlation between faith and intellect? Intelligence. I shouldn't say intellect. Intelligence.
I would think that the tendency to not believe in an afterlife would be more prevalent in the higher intellect, because they think they know everything and that it's prove everything. But in the average to lower IQ range, you know, most of us would think, well, I have faith because I believe, you know, it's a choice that you make from within your heart. And intellect doesn't make that. I have a higher IQ, I guess, than the average guy. But for me, I didn't really come to believe until, I was down in Australia, I think it was. I signed on board then. It was when I was running for my own government. And, you know, because I had the secret of the UFO base and everything down there that I'd been at. And it wasn't logic that took over, really. It was, holy cow, I'm in a foxhole and everybody's after me. And there are no atheists in a foxhole. Mm-hmm. So it certainly convinced me I better look at this, you know, with a new set of eyes. And that was kind of where my, you know, my path diverged from being just a, you know, scientist and things like that to where I looked for proof. And I got some things. As time went on, I got a lot of things. But I had to make that emotional acceptance before the proof. The intellect wasn't the solution. It was understanding that you needed help and that we'll need help when we die. You're hoping there's some place to go to. And sadly, it takes getting to the point, for me anyway, that, you know, I'm going to die pretty soon. So, you know. As I say, there are no atheists in a foxhole.
No, I understand that. And I just, I don't know what I would, at my age and, you know, whatever my expiration date, whenever God calls me home, if I didn't believe, I don't know what kind of life I would, what my disposition would be. You know what I mean? It would be like, okay, that's it. Lights out, you know, nothing after it. My goodness. That would mess with my head. I don't know. It just seems to me that knowing and believing, I should say, that there's, with all my faith, that there's life and God after, you know, after death.
Well, look, if you look at it scientifically again, eventually you will have to come to the point that you realize that the universe has been created by an intelligent mind. It wasn't sporadic or accidental. But there are a number of examples given by scientists who are Christians that are explaining why. And one of them was like a beetle that has to defend itself. It shoots out a toxic spray out its backside when threatened by, you know, a predator.
Kind of like Eric the Tech. Sorry.
Whoops. Well, right. It was a good lunch today, was it? Anyway, the beetle, if it were to evolve, it would have a problem because to do what it does today, this particular beetle, it has to mix two chemicals in a chamber in its body, which is built to withstand the small explosion that takes place when these chemicals mix and shoot out its backside where that little orifice is to blind or harm the predator. If it were being done by evolution, the first beetle that had this, you know, twin, you know, particle or twin chemistry thing combining in his chamber, his backside, would blow up if he didn't have the surrounding shell that protects him. That had to evolve in their viewpoint, and it would self-destruct before all the parts of it evolved together. You know, if there's no internal shielding against that, then he would blow himself up. You know, and if it didn't work, then the population of beetles would probably be a lot less, if any at all, because the predator would have consumed them because there was no defense mechanism. Mm-hmm. So it had to be an intelligent design. And that's just a very small, somewhat poor example of what scientists are finding when they look for God or the existence of a creator. Once they've done that, then they need to look into, you know, things about these near-death experiences and prophetic dreams and things like that. And it opens their mind to reading the truth. You know, the blinders are taken off. But it takes something like that for them to discover, well, wait a minute, this couldn't possibly work without it being all created together, an intelligent design. So anyway.
You know, speaking, if I can digress just one more time with you, and I know I've talked to you about this before, but I believe that this is my belief, and I'm not sure I can articulate it, but I believe that our consciousness resides outside of our body, kind of like on a cloud server, if you will. Okay, so I say that only because it seems to me that we have a lot of you get certain feelings like, boy, whether it's people like to call it deja vu or they have this impending sense of something's going to happen. I think that there's some interaction in that cloud server of consciousness, if that makes sense. And if that's the case, I think that speaks more to a God creation for those non-believers than not. And again, I don't even know if I made sense, but that's just the way I believe. So,
yeah. Well, you know.
We can talk about the Beatles. Let's go back.
Okay. Well, one other thing that was leading me to be a believer before I made that decision there in the desert there in Australia was that time I was in the hospital with a gunshot wound, and that nurse that appeared late at night there and rubbed that salve on my back that healed my body very rapidly. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, she disappeared. I've told the story a number of times before, but, you know, I was amazed by this, that there was this being just suddenly appeared in the doorway and had this magic stuff that rubbed on my back that was probably nanites or something like that to heal the body. And so I put it in my memory as interesting phenomenon. So where did that person come from? There are a lot of little things like that happen in your life until the moment you get to where you make the decision for the Lord or don't.
I agree. And that's, by the way, is a fascinating story of your experience there.
Well, you know, since I've had that experience, I've in my prayers every day, I ask the Lord to bless the angels he sent to watch over me, to put my thanks to them, to bless them.
And I, you know, I'm glad you said that because I believe too that we have angels looking over each one of us. I don't know. Do you believe? I mean, you believe that, right? Does it matter? I mean, I don't think it really matters, folks. But what people, what I believe, or what others believe. But I like to think that God assigns each one of us an angel, you know, to kind of nudge us in that. In the direction that we need to go if we're walking. If we get too close to this edge of the road, you know, he kind of nudges, or the angel nudges us over to the sidewalk, so to speak.
Well, I think that they do the will of the Creator, of God, and of Jesus. And eventually, those of us that make it to, the bride to be, joined with Jesus in the heavens, we will be sitting in judgment over angels. So it's to their advantage to take care of us anyway, because some of us are going to be, judging them should they step out of line. And that's in the 1,000-year millennial reign, I think that would occur. But
So we can say, well, you push instead of pushing me on the side, you pushed me in front of the bus. What the heck was that about? All right, yeah. But yeah, and I'm making light, of course, but yeah, that's very interesting. Wow.
Now, well, I look at a number of little miracles and some really big miracles that happened in my life. Maybe the angels take your message and request and whatever, or your condition and relate it to God. Maybe that's their function. I'm sure they wouldn't be just sitting there with a notebook taking notes on what you did good and bad. I think they're going to do things that, like that stint in the hospital where I was healed there. And being delivered from, agents that were tracking me in the desert there, the miracles add up to the point that someone or someone's, plural angels, are making things happen around you that some of them you think, oh, why did that happen? That was a pain. But then you realize a few steps down the road, well, no, that wasn't such a pain because it put me into this situation here, which is really good. And so that's why I pray for my angels, angel or angels. I don't know how many there are with us, but I know positively in my life that the coincidences were not coincidences. They were by intelligent design in my life.
Exactly. And I think if everyone listening and watching this, if you take inventory of all the various events in your life, how many times maybe have you experienced? Yeah, maybe if you didn't go to that party that one night, or the family gathering, or the graduation ceremony, you wouldn't have met your spouse. Maybe if you didn't have to turn around to go get your keys. It could have been you in that accident, or get your, you know, whatever you forgot at the house. It could have been you in that accident down the road, that fatal accident, when that truck ran the stop sign. You know, things like that. I don't know. I guess I'm pretty introspective today. But is that introspective or just, I don't know.
I guess it'd fall in that category.
All right. I don't mean to take away from your time. It's just interesting to talk about.
Yeah. No, we're having a discussion here. On that note, how many minutes do we have left now?
We have 8 minutes.
8 minutes. Okay. It's okay. Right. Well, let me get to some of the other things here. The, slides 37 through 39 are of interest. They're nothing earth shattering, but they're interest to see how God designed these animals. Like number 37, it shows a lizard. It might even be a chameleon. But anyway, it shows his tongue extended to get a bug it's going to consume on this twig. And you can see how long his tongue is. And in that, in the article there that's in the text underneath there, if you go there, you'll see other animals with weird tongues, which, you know, I thought was pretty cool. You have to page through them one at a time, but it's really
good. That comes in handy for reach. Never mind, reaching food and so. Yeah, okay.
Wow. I've seen, where was it? In some like National Geographic thing, whatever they had, I think it was a frog, but it had taken its tongue out and was cleaning its eyeballs, you know, getting the dust out. And I was somewhat impressed with that. Anyway, that's...
Yeah, I'm thinking of a joke, a collegiate joke, but I'll leave that one go. All right.
You had an interesting time in college, eh? Yes.
Yeah, well.
And another little thing that was of interest to Holly and I, because we get a few of these daddy long legs, that's slide 39. You know, we had both heard years ago that the reason that they don't kill you when they bite you is that they don't have a big enough mouth to, or pincers, whatever, you know, the claws in its mouth to dig deep into your skin and inject the poison. But it is, you know, very bad poison, you know, fatal. So when I read this article, it says, number one, the bite from a daddy long legs, if it could inject this toxin into you, would only make you a bit ill. You know, it's not going to kill you. That number two, that the daddy long legs can get pincers down into the top layer of your skin. They are equipped with that, but not to worry about them, because even if they could do it, you know, inject this toxin into you, it would be, you know, like a bee sting and it would go away. So I just want to encourage people that were thinking, yeah, because I've probably talked about this before, that, you know, the bite from a daddy long leg is, you know, really severe, but it's not that bad. Not fatal anyway. Anyway, just a little thing there.
There's nothing you can say. Nothing. About spiders and bites. No. As my little Joe. No. There's not. No. I never want to see a spider. Look, I'm okay with mice. Spiders, snakes, and bats. Mm-mm. No. I will shoot them. I seriously, I will shoot them.
Oh, well, I do take them, the spiders down. But it's being like, you're like Indiana Hagman, because you're saying, why do there have to be spiders? And I don't like snakes. I don't like spiders. Mice, we've got one of the little devils down here in the office somewhere. I'm trying to catch at the moment.
I don't mind mice. I mean, I'll take a mouse over a spider any day. You show me a spider. You know, I tell you something, man. I call my wife, and she kills the spiders.
Well, Holly's got the odd one that she's taken down in you know, kind of under duress because I was doing something else. But most of the time she calls me to get rid of the spiders. So it's my duty in this house anyway.
Nope.
Okay, looking at another thing. Let me get quickly up here to slide 45. A giant 50-meter deep, that's about 160 some odd feet deep, crater opens up in the Antarctic, or the Arctic, in the northern tundra. Now, the reason I find this interesting is, if you look at the pictures, there's one at the top, one at the bottom of the same crater. You see that there is an eruption of stuff that fell over the outside of it. It's not like an impact of a crater, a meteor in a crater that it formed, because with those, you have this splashback, you know, and patterns to it. With this, this is right up to the edge. It's not splashed out. It's, well, not far anyway. It's come up and over the sides, all this stuff that was in the hole. And you can see in the darkness of the hole that that's where that stuff came between there and the surface. But in looking at the article that goes with this, I found that the pressure of the gas bubble down there, you know, the methane gas, was gradually pushing up a dome. And it was green fields over the top of it, but then this dome was rising up in that spot. And it reached a point where, boom, it erupted. It took, had enough force to break out, you know, into the surface and put all that material that was above it over on the side. And you don't see marks of, like, burning or anything like that, but you do see pressure evidence in the way the ejecta was formed at that hole. But the main thing that bothered me was this is one of several big holes opening up like this in the tundra where, you know, dying microbes and animals, sea animals, whatever, underneath all that, released this methane gas because the temperature was rising and they weren't frozen anymore. And along with the other reports we're getting about melting ice, glaciers down at the South Pole melting, this is all leading to a thing that you and I have talked about before, about what happens if all these hydrates, methane hydrates and stuff that are down in seabeds that are frozen, get warm and release their gas, and this stuff in the tundra releases its gas. What would happen if it was struck by lightning when they had this? Because this gas is flammable, explosive. And it could happen over a wide area just all at once if we get a really good shake in the planet, like a really serious Richter 7 or 8 over one of these areas. Just a thought. I mean, it's a fascinating piece of science to look at this and see how it formed and, you know, what the layers of the dirt under the tundra were like. But way down deep below this, I mean, deep, is where the gas was coming from. So this overburden, you know, that forms the tundra, came after that, and it may have come after the Great Flood, which, you know, killed a lot of sea and land animals. You know, again, looking at a younger Earth, but that's another day, another discussion.
Wow. Okay. Just thinking about that. I mean, all jokes aside, you know, with young boys and lighters and all those jokes aside, that would be something if I mean, it wouldn't be a good day, that's for sure, if lightning struck at that moment or at that time, at that location.
Well, it just shows that things are happening. I mean, the magnetic field of the Earth is drifting very rapidly, and it's connected to the South Atlantic Anomaly, which you'll see in slide 43, which I don't know that I have a link to yet. Let me just see. Oh, yeah, a little bit there, what's in the article. I hadn't put in the text link, but I'll do that later. The sun, slide 40, 41, and 43, they're all, 42, they're all together about the current state of the magnetic field of the sun. A huge, like what should be a sunspot, but a huge display of filaments coming off of the surface of the sun. I think we're going to have, if we haven't had already today, tomorrow, or today late, we will have solar or magnetic storms caused by this because it's aimed in our direction. And it's not through. It's got to move over a couple more days, and it could be Earth-directed, something coming from this. It's a pretty big thing.
Yeah, you talked about that last week. And now's about the time. We'll watch the next couple of days, right?
Yep.
Wow. You did it, man. We're at the end of the show. I can't believe it.
I apologize for the mess ups on the leg.
Oh, no, man. No. You know what? It's good. It's good to talk with you. And I, you know what? I hope you feel good. I hope you feel better. I really do. And folks, we'll be praying for you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right, brother. Talk soon.
All righty.
All right, bye-bye, folks. Lord. That was Stan Deo, standeo.com. Pray on, keep him in your prayers. We're getting old. Things don't work right sometimes. Ask Eric. He knows. Folks, I do hope I do want to say thank you very much for all the Patreon members, for all your support on PayPal, for all the letters, cards that I read them all. And I want to say thank you from the bottom of my heart for supporting this broadcast. May God bless each and every one of you. Have a great night.